Hello, today's August 4th, and we're doing government and social. My name's Krista. I'm here with the Level 1 News.
What's your favorite color, Krista? It's pink. We
Yellow.
Already know. You need to give us an update on the camping experience.
Oh, yeah. We did the podcast, and we talked about it. It was good. It was nice to get out of the house. We did a backcountry camping trip, so the whole world is your toilet, so the COVID risk is extremely minimal.
Well, yeah, we did establish that you did poop outside.
I did, yeah.
Dog did not.
More details. Dog so did subscribe not. To the podcast for more details.
Didn't take the pup.
No, I didn't take the pup, no. And I think that was a good decision. My friend who went with me, she took her little dog. And it wasn't, like, he was good. He's a good little dog. But, like, she has to carry twice as much water for herself and the dog, and that was punishing on her back, and I was kind of glad I didn't bring Rue, because Rue's bigger than hers, and would have required even more water. Anyway, it was a good trip. 10 out of 10. Yeah. Would hike along the lake again.
I feel like we had some other questions. Oh, the burning question, Krista. And I think this was at the top of everyone's mind, you know, behind the whole bathroom facilities question. Does your sleep schedule remain as bad as it is in your civilian life when you go camping?
Yes. I actually took a low dosage of Benadryl to get to sleep.
So you were drugged sleeping outdoors. That sounds like a great plan.
That's fine. No, because, well, you know, it stays light pretty late this time of year. So, like, we get to camp at, like, 5:30. We get everything set up. We swim for a little bit. And then we go back, you know, eat dinner. And I climb in the hammock, and it's, like, 8 o'clock. And I'm like, I can't sleep.
Well, you're swimming in a lake?
Yeah, there's a lake near the trail.
With all of your fear of amoebas and stuff?
Well, yeah. I mean, I didn't, like, dunk my head or anything, but it was hot. It was so hot.
There's lots more entry points, Krista.
The insect activity alone. I mean, this sounds like the beginning of... So where were you when the vaccine turned out to be the zombification serum?
Oh, man. I did get eat up by bugs. I was laying in my hammock at one point, and I had my foot, like, outstretched, and I got a bug bite on the bottom of my foot. The eat one up. Place I didn't spray.
Eat up being the technical term.
Eat up, yeah. That's how my family would pronounce it. It's kind of actually how I pronounce it, too.
So we have, it's basically antitrust August. We're kicking off August with all kinds of antitrust. Of course, we had the big you know, meeting of the minds. They didn't actually meet. They did it remotely, which was interesting. But it dominated the news, and that's what it's going to be about. We're going to do a quick story, a government-related story before we entered into that, just because, good Lord, here we are. You know, it just keeps spiraling.
Ars Technica reports that hospital data about the thing that we find ourselves in is a hot mess after feds take control. Weird discrepancies and fluctuations, the trackers for this thing say the data is less useful. Oh, man, if only we had an agency that was supposed to receive the data. Oh, wait, we did. This was changed. Engagement challenge. Why? Why did we do this?
Well, each state,
you know what?
Each state did their own thing,
but they all submitted to the CDC.
Right, but the federal fear, I think, was that the states might manipulate before it got there. But here's the thing: despite that workflow, it's a different set of fields.
It's not a one-to-one,
and so the hospitals had a different, like, I guess usually they would send it to the state, who would then collate it and format it for the government, for the Fed. But now that's out. So now the hospital has a different format to submit to. And in the cases where they still submit to the state government, now they have two formats that are different. So,
man, this sounds exactly like a project that we did. It's like, I need to know if people like blue shoes. And it's like, we don't even have analytics data for how many visitors you have.
This website's about horses.
The one I've been looking at this point is the Johns Hopkins tracker. I don't know how accurate it is, though. I don't know where they get their data from. It's hard.
Presumably from the same place.
Yeah, I would think. Not good. Not good either way.
Yeah.
They've been, at least here, they've been pretty good about posting the local stats on the website and also, like, correcting it. Because sometimes, like, there was a couple of times where the test center was like, all right, everybody's positive. And it's like, no, that's not actually correct. Or there was something where they were so far behind, they started grouping tests together. So, like, if one of, like, six people will be tested at once, and if one of those Like, that would come back positive, and then they would say all six people tested positive when really it was only one person that just had to be retested. But they've fixed all that, so it's a mess.
Have they? Can we count for that?
They say they have.
No,
even if it's like 50% less, like, that's still a lot of people infected.
Yeah.
It was that inaccurate, which I don't think it's that inaccurate.
But if it's that inaccurate, couldn't it be inaccurate in both directions?
Yeah, and that's the scary thing. It could be way worse, or it could be maybe not as bad, but either way, it's not good.
Well, the old people are dropping like flies, judging by the number of estate auctions that have come up.
Popped up. Foreclosures as well, though that may be unrelated.
Got myself some silver coins the other day.
Seriously? I got a dehydrator. Very excited.
Nice. You should have bought that freezer.
And I probably should have.
You definitely should have bought
the
van.
I mentioned that to my husband. I was like, we should get a deep freeze. And he was like, where would we put it? And I was like, that's a good question, but that's a question for future us.
Put it on the porch, East Kentucky style.
Yeah, we could actually. We do have space out there. You know, I don't know. We don't have a working outlet outside, though.
Legally, you have to put a chain around it if you put it on your porch because children might crawl into it and die.
I thought that they have a latch now on freezers where it's like they won't latch shut like they used to with kids.
Yeah, if it's got a keyed lock, you don't have to have the chain.
Huh.
Okay, I guess I'm outdated on my freezer lore. Anyway, antitrust. Now, we've got a big antitrust block here. I couldn't decide, do we sort it by the company? Do we sort it by, like, what's going on in the U.S. versus the states versus internationally or whatever? And it's kind of a mess, but we're just going to roll with it. We're just going to enjoy the mess of it. And we'll start off with Google.
Well, should we start off with the event that precipitated this for the people that are living under a rock, which is there was an antitrust hearing before the Senate. Congress.
Yeah, and Zuckerberg and Bezos and Pichai. We don't know how to pronounce his name. They all participated, and there was some external sources who they were kind of ratting each other out, and there was a lot of backstabbing. And there were some third parties who sort of testified on behalf of, yes, they are screwing us. One of those was Blue Mail.
Blue Mail kicked off the Play Store update. It's back, plus a Google statement. Yeah, so Blue Mail is an email program that has some features that Google just added to Gmail. And they said, hey, you know, here's some things that Google has done that maybe has undermined what we're doing. And then they disappeared from the Play Store for nebulous reasons. And then they're like, oh, sorry, we're back.
Google's reasoning is that their email app was too much like another email app that they felt they were copying. Blue Mail has been on the App Store for 7 years.
Yeah. The other app, not so much.
Hmm. So Google said it had nothing to do with that. They were not retaliating at all.
And yet,
how dare you? How dare you? They said. And as
the timing is suspicious.
As usual, the biggest thing that these hearings point out is not that our giant tech companies are hopelessly corrupt. We already knew that, and it's not that they are monopolizing at full throttle. We already knew that. What it points out, and I guess we already knew this too, is that our leaders have no idea about technology.
None.
Just absolutely clueless.
This Vice article is amazing. GOP congressman turns antitrust hearing into a personal tech support session. I think that that heading is a little harsh, but the specific exchange was between the Google representative and this congressman, and he said that he sends his parents campaign emails, and his parents use Gmail. And his parents do not get mail from him when it is a campaign email. And the guy from Google tried to explain. It's like, well, Gmail knows it's from your campaign, so it goes into a tab. It's a different tab. And he said, well, this sounds like you're interfering with communication from me to my parents. That's a personal communication. And the Google person kind of tried to explain that's not really personal communication, that you're sending bulk email. It's not from your personal email address. It's like kind of, and this point was lost on him.
I've had to explain this to clients before when talking about email newsletters. Cause sometimes, you know, they go to spam inbox and they're like, "What? It shouldn't go to spam." And I'm like, "Well, I mean, we can do some stuff to mitigate that, but like, if it's a form letter, it may get accidentally filtered to spam. You're going to have to tell your subscriber that." Like,
here's the thing: it's spam.
Yeah.
Well, Google's not even calling it spam. They're just giving you a different tab that's like, here's you know, something that was not a personal message sent directly to you. So
people do not like that. They do not understand that.
The campaigns don't like being able to not reach, you know, immediately whoever.
So the big takeaway from the hearing, I think, is that the government doesn't understand what's going on, but they don't really care either. I think they've pretty much already made up their mind.
Yeah. Top antitrust Democrat, there's a case to break up Facebook, according to Axios. The most surprising thing about this headline is that, you know, we had testimony from Apple and Google and Amazon, and there was a lot of really insane stuff in that testimony, like far more insane than I would have figured. And of course, we know about Facebook. And they're calling for the breakup of Facebook, but not Apple or Amazon or Google.
But two of those entities disrupt advertising and the business world, whereas Facebook disrupts politics and campaigning.
One of these
things. Are you
things
saying that they're being
like
selfish? Never.
Now, Zuckerberg was under the lights, and they were really going hard at him. His, like, pre-formatted form letter responses were not working. They were interrupting him, and it was like, yes or no, Mr. Zuckerberg. And I think he got a little bit backed into a corner, and what do you do when you back into a corner? You accuse the other guy.
Bloomberg reports that Zuckerberg goes off script and blasts Apple and Google in testimony. So, I mean, you know, Bloomberg admits that off script there is, there's not a script that they know of. But he said the crux of what Zuckerberg was saying is, look, Facebook is behind in terms of advertising. Google is a larger advertiser, and Amazon is a more lucrative advertising platform. They are competitors to Facebook. Facebook is at a severe disadvantage for the things that you're talking about. So, like what you said, I think the senators are more interested in that because it's personal communication as opposed to business communication. And for things like politics, Facebook is obviously more effective.
Yeah. And, you know, Facebook is more hearts and minds. Yeah. And that's what matters to the people in politics.
Old people, hearts and minds, who are more likely to vote.
They'll take the money of those business people, but when it gets right down to it, they can't do that if they're not in office. That's the thing. And one of the big things on the discussion table, obviously, were the app stores, the walled gardens. And are those monopolies? Is there fairness there? And one really interesting thing about this congressional hearing is that we got a lot of stuff. I mean, what they were saying was total fabrication, but we got some emails and some documents that revealed something else.
9 to 5 Mac reports that internal emails show how Amazon ad prompted Steve Jobs and Phil Schiller to block in-app purchases of Kindle books on iOS. So there's a lot of like bombshell level stuff that is revealed in these emails. You should definitely go read these. But yeah, it's like, I think this is all pretty simple. iBooks is going to be the only bookstore on iOS devices. We need to hold our heads up, and once one can read books elsewhere, but just not buy, rent, subscribe from iOS without paying us, which we acknowledge is prohibitive for many things.
So the ad in question showed how easy it was to buy your books through Amazon and read them on your iPhone.
And also your Android and also whatever. He's like, no, this is too easy. It's too easy for people to switch devices.
So they colluded internally. Yes, this is a problem. And we need a 30% or we need this not to happen.
This is a great contemporary evidence, because this isn't that many years ago, that Apple does not have your best interests at heart. Apple wants you to become a Kool-Aid drinking member of their cargo cult, and they don't want to let you escape.
And it's ironic that Amazon would be the victim there, because they are certainly not without sin.
Amazon CEO Jeff Bezos can't guarantee policy against using seller-specific data hasn't been violated. This is in the context of, hey, Amazon, do you guys look at your third-party sellers that are selling products and then say, hey, we can sell those products better? And he says, oh, we can't guarantee that. And then do you have the next story about diapers.com in there? Because, oh my gosh, that is amazing.
That's in the business section.
Oh, okay. Well, we're going to talk about Amazon and diapers.com because, wow.
Also, that is the first time Bezos has ever been in front of government.
He didn't do well.
I saw the pictures I saw of him. He looks like very worried in every clip. Like he's
I guess like the professional photography he puts out there, he does have kind of a commanding presence, even though he's a very small man, isn't he?
Yeah, I think he's kind of tall. He's just wiry, just
kind of scrawny. But yeah, he kind of
looks very worried.
You think that was what they were going for? Make him seem just, you know, demure and
worried and puzzled about these accusations.
A lot of it just seemed like insane saber rattling. But at the end of the day, he has so much money that it's irrelevant.
And finally, it's not just the U.S. that's going after antitrust. Actually, the EU did it first. They've been banging this drum much longer than we have. I think we kind of copied their style there. So government needs money all of a sudden. But we have a little bit more news of all that moving forward in the EU.
Telegram hits out at Apple's App Store tax, quote-unquote, in latest EU antitrust complaint. They're saying, hey, Apple has got this policy that if we want to be in the App Store, we got to take the 30% or nothing. And they won't allow us to have apps there unless we get them their cut.
Pretty damning. I don't know. Now, the Apple's defense of that, which kind of makes sense, is that in market share, Android is so much bigger. So it's like, we're just this one tiny little, but that's still a lot of money. A lot of money on the table. And another Amazon news, not to do with antitrust, which is why this is separated. It's still Amazon news, but again, how do you group these together? I don't know.
We spent 20 minutes going through these stories trying to group them.
So when it comes to how many times cops go to a tech business to try and demand data, they're only allowed to give us round numbers. But the round numbers are getting rounder.
Amazon says police demands for customer data have gone up. So, hey, we've got a suspect in this area that bought some nylon rope. Can we get any Amazon customer that lives within a 5-mile radius of this location that bought nylon rope?
So here's the annual numbers.
Thousands of subpoenas.
Less readable than when I don't click
all
on
or partial user data in 70% of cases.
So yeah, about 75% of the time, they give them what they want, which is a lot.
Think about how detailed.
Doesn't feel good.
Yeah, Amazon's profile on you is fairly detailed. Look at all those gummy bears that we've ordered on your behalf. How are you going to explain that?
I take a little bit of comfort because I order all of my parents' crap through Amazon as well. So, like, there's my profile, which is probably, you know, like, pretty stark. And then there's, like, you know, motivational Christian books sprinkled in there.
Yeah,
hard supplies. All the various, you know, like, weird country stuff that they get from Amazon. So my profile's just got to be like, you know, 0.0001%. Google also in the EU is facing some problems with their latest gobbling up of another entity. Again, this is the big antitrust story. Actually, I should have put this in the other thing. Oh, wow.
Well, Google's $2.1 billion Fitbit deal faces EU antitrust probe per sources. So the EU is getting out the full antitrust. It's going to slow down this deal. We reported on this last week or the week before, and Google had offered a bunch of concessions to try to not slow this deal down. But yeah, the EU is going to get this out, and they're going to go full antitrust probe before letting this deal move forward, which is kind of surprising because the other EU members that are a part of this actually wanted the deal to move forward. So this is big EU versus EU member state, I think. I think that's how that's going to play out. I don't know, but that's what it's looking like.
In Germany, they have these interesting right-to-be-forgotten laws, which mostly affect Google. So if you do something embarrassing and people can Google that about you, is it okay to just get rid of that? Just say, no, that never happened.
It's technically not getting rid of it. You don't get rid of it from the internet. You get rid of it from Google, which I think is attacking the wrong place.
But that's effectively the same thing. But you can't just say to a website you're not allowed to publish the truth.
Yeah.
Although that's kind of what they're doing here.
Yeah. Google victory in German top court over right to be forgotten. A German court has sided with Google and rejected requests to wipe entries from search results. The case hinged on whether the right to be forgotten outweighed the public's right to know. This is a lot of work and time and money for Google to be able to respond to these. In this case, the people that were moving to be forgotten had... there was a suggestion of impropriety for one who was an investment manager, and because there was an article about it, and then there was another one that was, you know, something from a long time ago, and Google and the EU court said, no, the public still has a right to know these. There was another case that the article talked about, which was there was a teacher that had, you know, some kind of a lien or a debt or something that was more than 10 years old, and it would show up in Google searches. And so they said, no, Google, you have to delist that one. So it's a case-by-case basis, which seems inordinately expensive to pursue. And the reality is when you send one of these requests, Google's probably just going to say, okay, whatever.
And the two in question had not been resolved yet either.
Yeah.
So it's like, well, if you're innocent, we're actually not sure yet. We don't know if this is real or not. So does the public have a right to know that this is ongoing? Probably do. We'll see. And, of course, Google tracking people is a problem because of that whole location thing. Hey, remember the virus tracker app? Hey, you got to turn on your location. You want to use Google Maps or something like that? You want to use Google Car, Android Auto? Hey, you got to turn on the location. Always with the location stuff. Some states don't like it.
Let the public see how Google tracks users in Arizona, a judge is urged. So there's a case before a judge about this kind of stuff, and the briefs are in, and basically the judge is being encouraged to order Google to disclose exactly how the location tracking data is stored.
Well, I think they have it in the case.
Yeah.
So the judge has it, but it's the question of does he release it to the public. Yeah.
Yeah.
Judges are usually not very motivated to do that.
It's a business secret, is it though? Would people freak out if they knew? See, that's the yardstick.
Yeah, they would. Sure. Remember the thing where, like on the conference call or something, they were talking about, it's like, hey, if people get the choice to opt out of this, it's really going to affect us. And Arizona, not just busy with Google, but once again, going after all the big tech names.
Arizona leads multi-state probe into iPhone slowing and shutting down. So this is a thing on Reuters. I have a feeling this is going to come out in the whole right to repair thing, which we actually have more stories about right to repair in the business section. But this is, you know, the thing that Apple did. Apple said, oh, when we detected that a battery is aging, we're going to take some steps to slow the phone down to help prolong the lifetime of the battery. And if you do something computationally intensive, the battery may not be able to deliver the power necessary to do that, and then the phone just turns off. So the way of mitigating that is you just underclock the phone. Well, that's not okay, because it works differently today than it did yesterday as a result of a software update.
So,
could you argue that the battery is defective, or defective by design, or planned obsolescence, which theoretically is illegal under U.S. law?
But it happens all the time.
Sure does.
Well, but nobody can make a battery that doesn't do that. Although you could make a replaceable battery.
Yes.
Yeah.
And in fact, Apple does have documentation on how to replace the battery. They had that battery replacement program where they were charging a somewhat reasonable fee to replace your battery for a while there. They discontinued that.
Apple also has a bit of a problem when it comes to fraud on their platform. Now, of course, every platform has fraud. But Apple has a kind of a specific vector. That App Store that everybody is, you know, so concerned about, that 30%, well, you know who isn't concerned? Thieves. Because what they'll do is they'll create an app that is essentially useless, but, you know, charge a couple of bucks for it. Who would buy it? Well, they would buy it with stolen cards.
Apple being sued for refusing to help iTunes gift cards scam victims. So this article points out, hey, Apple gets a cut of 30%, so Apple is always in a position to refund at least 30% of the money that's stolen, because let's say a scammer scams somebody out of a $100 iTunes gift card. Somebody paid $100 for that. Then they used the gift card and Apple paid the thief, presumably. The money's gone. But Apple still has 30% or $30 of that $100. They could at least refund that. Apple's like, nope, not our problem.
They also point out that the payments are not instant. It's like a 4 to 6 weeks lockup procedure. So if they wanted to, they probably could investigate and they could reverse the payments. But they don't want to.
Man, they just don't make enough money. The margins are too thin, too razor thin.
You think there's a graph economy in the top secret quarterly reports, there's a graph of fraudulent 30% profits that we made?
Yeah, we're going to be hearing about it in the congressional hearings in 2023. Yeah. I guarantee you that the only thing that, like, the congressional hearing, like this antitrust thing, was so insane and so over the top that all these corporate critters, they're just going to go more underground with this. They're going to have the regular corporate email system, and then they're going to have like the secure phone. And someday, yeah, the emails are going to leak from that system, and it's literally going to be like, you know, how much money are we losing to try to force competitor X out of business? And like, how much money are we scamming out of, you know, like we're aware of this old lady scam where that involves iTunes gift cards. But, you know, if we look the other way, we could make an extra $1.3 billion this year.
They got to be really careful with that, though, because they've now got the woke culture within their ranks. And if they get a whiff of it, they're going to turn on them. So you got to be really clandestine if you're going to play this game now. Australia has also made an interesting decision that a lot of countries have been threatening. It's a weird business model when it comes to news on the internet. Who promotes it? Who gets you to visit it? The sites that collate it? Who gets paid? And down under, it's going to be a weird world.
Australia to make Facebook and Google pay for news in a world first. Australia will force U.S. giants Facebook and Alphabet's Google to pay Australian media outlets for news content in a landmark ruling. I don't understand enough about where the line is with this. Like, would the level one news basically be prohibited on Australia? Because
I think it's when you summarize. Well, I guess that's what we're doing.
But we get commentary too, but.
But in text, so like if I go to Google News, for example, it'll give me two sentences that will basically sum up the story. And they don't like that because I can get the news without the click to them.
Is it that it was done algorithmically is the hang up?
Yeah, I'm sure. Well, I probably wouldn't care if humans were doing it. It's just that, hey, we're not getting the traffic.
And it's funny because I'm sure that their sites, they've probably optimized them for things like Google's. And so probably even have like a perfect tagline. So it'll get pushed up in the Google results. And
they pointed out the same thing happened in Germany. And Google was just like, all right, we're out. We're not going to do German news anymore. And a couple months later, the German news sites were like, oh, we were just kidding.
Yeah, I don't understand why Google would play ball with this. Like they have the power in the situation.
Yeah, if they're smart, they'll do the same thing.
just turn off Google for Australia and
or Google News.
Yeah. I mean, just turn it all off. Can't log into Gmail. It's we've detected you're logging in from Australia. Google's not allowed in Australia. Sorry. See ya.
They'll just go to China.
Welcome to Baidu.
the Great Firewall will just expand a little bit, gobble them up.
We were always in a land war with Asia.
This is a follow-up. This is one-sided, obviously, because it's from one side of the argument. But we've been talking about the library thing because we're in the pandemic. Books are not getting lended. And when they are, that's kind of dangerous. So why not take those physical copies and proxy them with digital copies? Well, the publishers and the authors didn't like it.
HarperCollins is losing their mind.
And so the Internet Archive, who's been working on this, has responded.
The Internet Archive says that libraries lend books and must continue to lend books. The Internet Archive responds to publisher's lawsuit. It's from the Internet Archive, but they have a good point. Under the publisher's arguments, libraries basically couldn't exist. And publishers have for 100+ years. If we want to go back, what is at stake with this lawsuit? Every digital learner's access to library books. That's why the Internet Archive is standing up to defend the rights of hundreds of libraries that are using controlled digital lending. So the thing that the lawsuit I don't think is being honest about is that the copies that the Internet Archive lended out were backed by libraries that were participating with the Internet Archive. So hundreds, thousands of librarians say, yes, we actually do have 587 copies of this book. We're going to lend out 587 copies at a time to people on the internet. This is not giving people a copy of the book that they can keep forever. It's a DRM-protected work. And if these companies, the same publishing companies, purport to sell you a DRM-protected book on like Amazon or iOS or whatever, and that's good enough, then the Internet Archives DRM protected ebook, surely that would also be good enough as well.
They also point out the whole idea that, you know, distance learning is now the norm.
A thing, yeah.
So kids are stuck at home. They don't have access to libraries, even school libraries. Wouldn't this be the best time ever to give them digital copies of books?
We haven't seen this much freak out in the publishing industry since the Catholic Church was trying to shut down Gutenberg.
So, speaking of the Catholic Church, they have a bit of a contentious relationship, like most religions, with the Chinese Communist Party. Religion doesn't really play a role when you're a good Chinese citizen. But you can't really snuff that out, even if you are a totalitarian government. I mean, it's been tried, but you just can't do it. So they've been kind of in some talks, and when you're in a negotiation with the Chinese government, what happens?
The Vatican is said to be hacked from China before talks with Beijing. So in one attack, the hackers weaponized an electronic file with a letter that had a note of condolence from Cardinal Pietro Parolin, the Vatican Secretary of State. You open the document, and then they're in. It's pretty typical. It's like China doesn't know. They need intelligence. They need to know, like, what are you really thinking? What position are you negotiating from?
What's interesting about this is I never thought about this, but, like, is there an IT security group that works for the Vatican? Almost certainly.
God, yeah. Well, they've got their own military, Krista.
Do they have a military?
Yeah, they do.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a powerful organization.
Can you imagine, though, being, like, the IT department for, like, all these very old pastors?
It's like Warhammer, where you have to pray to the machine gods, rub tincture on the motors. No, actually, they're probably some of the best people. Like, you guys got to pay a ton, right?
I would think, yeah.
Yeah.
I wonder if they have, like, special uniforms, because sometimes there's some kind of event, and I see the live stream of it, and it's like, wow, their outfits are really sharp. It's, like, black and red. There's, like, gold trim. It's like,
yeah, but it's really impressive. Actually, probably just, you know, like, three-piece suit, you know, like, very professional, I'm sure. Engagement challenge if you're part of the Vatican IT.
Military. Or the IT department.
They should put a little barcode on their little collar white thing.
That might be a little on the nose. TikTok, of course, big news with TikTok this week. Most of that will be in the business section. But we do have to talk about the fact that the group of people or group of countries banning it just keeps expanding.
After India and U.S., Japan looks to ban TikTok and other Chinese apps. It turns out it's just harvesting data and doing all sorts of crazy things in the background. Yeah. Turns out that's not a thing that people like. Well, I don't know. I don't think people really realize that's what's happening.
More and more do.
In the same way that people don't realize that, you know, Barr wants an encryption backdoor to mine your nudes. That's what you voluntarily give when you install apps like TikTok.
I think the group of people who enjoy TikTok are not the same as the group of people who would care.
Yeah.
Much. You know, like, the kids using TikTok, they're on some level, they're like, it's fine. Who cares? What's it going to... I don't got nothing to hide. I'm just a stupid kid.
Hope they don't plan to do anything.
No, they got no plans. That's the problem. They're not even going to school anymore. The big Twitter hack... We're moving into social media now. The big Twitter hack... we know who it affected. We know kind of what happened. And now we know how it happened and who did it, maybe.
Twitter says the high-profile hack was a result of a phishing attack.
Oh, yeah. Sad.
And it turns out it was a teen in Florida.
And as we learned last week, there were only 1,000 targets.
Florida teen, according to ZDNet, Florida teen arrested for orchestrating the Twitter hack. Main suspect identified as a 17-year-old teen from Florida, Tampa, Florida.
I thought they had a picture.
I didn't see the picture.
Saw a picture.
I didn't see it.
It was just some random stock photo. It's like bad luck.
Or maybe they had a picture and then they're like, oh, this kid's a minor, and they removed it.
I swear I saw a picture. Just regular looking kid. There are some other people who are involved.
Whoops.
And let's see if WFLA gives a picture of him. There he is.
Oh, there he is. Whoopsie.
He's going to have a bad time. There was one in the UK and one somewhere else. And, rough time for him. Bad time to be going into the county jail. what with, yeah. you know, the pandemic.
Yeah.
This is more, put this in the social media section, but this is more of those explosive emails that came out during that. Again, what Zuckerberg said didn't really reveal anything, but these emails
revealed a lot. The Verge reports Instagram can hurt us, according to Mark Zuckerberg's emails, and he outlines a plan to neutralize competitors. The antitrust panel says the messages show that Zuckerberg is trying to buy out his competition. One of the senators literally said that antitrust laws are designed to prevent exactly this situation from happening. And
it's too small to read, but basically yeah. he points out all these different ways that Instagram would be a competitor. And then he sent that email out. And he was like, here's all the different ways that Instagram might hurt us. Whereas these other companies, yeah, they'd be nice to have, but Instagram could be a competitor. And then 5 minutes later, he sent an email. He was like, I wasn't talking about competitiveness. All this, the stuff I said, not this is not anti-competitive, which was just a little bit more damning.
Yeah.
So
again, they're going to go underground with this kind of thing. It's like, I just need to decide if we're going to buy Instagram. Okay.
Spoiler alert, they did.
I can't wait for the diapers.com story. You don't get to $147 billion in wealth by being a nice guy, apparently.
Now, you know what? The one thing about that, and I would encourage everybody to go and read this email, because it kind of raised my opinion of Zuckerberg a little bit, because I didn't think he was that smart. But he is actually like a criminal mastermind.
He's a robot. He's got all kinds of data.
But I thought it was just, you know, like a kind of a mindless robot. But no, I mean, he's really, you know, he's playing 5D chess with Instagram and that. Also,
he's like the robots in the Alien universe, where it's like they're supposed to help you, but then they end up trying to kill you.
Yeah. And the way that they negotiated with Instagram is also described in there, which is pretty, I mean, again, brilliant, but not what you would call fair business, I don't think.
No.
Is there such a thing? The other thing that came out about Facebook that was kind of a little bit embarrassing is how they feel about iOS. Now, we've been covering iOS and their changes. For example, LinkedIn, we learned that LinkedIn was reading your clipboard.
Constantly.
Because iOS made these cool security changes that warns you every time something weird is going to happen. Now, it's not happened yet, but iOS 14 is going to add another one, which picks up all the cross-site tracking that all the various, like those Facebook like buttons.
It's also cross-app now. So like you can't marry the app profile to the web profile.
The phone ID. Yeah. You can't look at the phone ID unless you have explicit permission. And how does Facebook feel about that?
Facebook says that Apple's iOS 14 changes could hurt its ad targeting. Yeah. So it turns out Facebook has been wanting to compile and build these kinds of profiles on you, and they're not going to be able to do that under the new iOS. Do you think, like, Apple's version of 4D chess with this is that they plan to become this kind of an advertising platform? So they're moving to block all of these privacy things and to add encryption to cement their position as being literally the only people from which that information can be sourced.
You know, I thought that they excused themselves from that. We talked about that last week. Someone in the comments, who is presumably an iPhone user, said that they got those notifications in the Apple apps as well. So I guess that's a fair way of doing it. Although they could opt out of that at any time.
Yeah.
It could be, hey, let's expose it while we're not doing it. And then roll it back when we start doing it.
That's how it's been historically. But also, some of the emails from Apple that came out during the antitrust hearing show that they are just as, not even with the right to repair stuff, some of the business stuff and like the Amazon stuff, and like in terms of wanting to lock people into their ecosystem, like hold them hostage, lock them in, is unsettling, to say the least.
Well, the EU is taking Facebook to court again. Wait, no, what? It's the other way around?
Facebook is taking the EU to court for invading privacy. I can't help but think this is just some sort of silly maneuvering, but the EU is doing the whole antitrust probe, and as part of that, they're demanding information from employees, which Facebook gave them personal information on employees, which are being used in this court case somehow. But Facebook is saying, wait, this is an antitrust probe. You don't need the personal information of our employees for that.
Is that shattered glass or a net?
It's shattered glass. Definitely shattered glass. I could tell by some of the pixels.
It's a pretty good picture. Crystal, what do you think about that one?
It looks like if Gumby did a graphic.
Oh, on
Facebook. Why do you think that Gumby would be bad at graphic design?
But it's like, I mean, yeah, it's not necessarily a bad thing. It's just kind of strange. It's not a style I see typically for stock photos.
It looks like the F is made out of clay.
Yeah, it's like claymation.
Well, here's a headline that shouldn't shock anyone. I think we all knew this. Although, you know, I mean, all news sources are questionable these days, but really? How many? The disturbing thing is that there's a pretty non-trivial amount of people who are in this category.
Yeah. Study: U.S. adults who mostly rely on social media for news are less informed, exposed to more conspiracies. Can confirm, I had to, just last night, talk my mom out of installing malware on her phone, which purported to block scam callers.
That's not really a conspiracy.
And it's like, where did you find this, Mom? It's like, I got a message that said that I can block.
I got spam.
Yeah. It's just like.
That's a bold spam right there.
Yeah.
My mom, you know, with all the pandemic stuff, people post all the conspiracy theories on Twitter. And so maybe like once or twice a month, she'll call me and be like, have you seen this? And then I'll like look it up and then explain to her like, you know, what's valid about it and what's not. And she's like, okay, I didn't know. I thought it sounded weird, but like she just doesn't even think to look it up. She's just like, I don't know, someone posted this. Could it be true? Like,
no. Turns out the answer is no.
But usually, you know, it's not.
We do the news here, so we read most of the relevant news of the week, was anything to do with technology at least, and I'm less confident than ever.
Yeah.
About anything that I read.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I basically just question everything because so often it turns out to have been fake. We know now that the local news sites might all be fake. Who knows? The ones that aren't fake are just fed directly from Reuters and AP, and they just read whatever they're told.
You know, so far Reuters hasn't let me down, but I remember the first time I was reading something on like the New York Times, and it was like, there is no way this is real. And then sure enough, like 2 days later, they were like, our bad, Barry wasn't taking his medicine. We don't know what happened.
I'm really scared for when like deep fakes become more relevant. Because at least now, like, if you see video footage, it's like, okay, that's pretty hard to fake. But now it's like, when they do the deep fakes, it's like, will you even be able to believe anything that you see online? Like,
well, we'll be talking about that, because it's like, you know, was that in the nonsense section where it was like hackers would break in and post like fake stories?
Probably.
Yeah, so, and it's not like, oh, the entire, you know, New York Times is terrible. It's no, it's just there's a couple bad stories that get through, and then it's like, oh, everything's fake news.
Those are just trash WordPress sites. I don't think the New York Times is going to be that, but those local news sites for sure.
Didn't the New York Times carry the pet story, though? Like the pet, the dog?
No, that was a published in a journal.
Oh, journal, yeah. Okay.
A lot of people...
Oh, you continue.
A lot of people ran the headline based on the journal, but that was from a, you know, a scientific journal, so... can you blame them for that? What were you saying, Krista?
I was looking at this pie chart in the article, and like, I'm amazed that 8% of people still get news from the radio. That's more than print, which is only 3%.
I listen to NPR when I'm in the truck because I don't have any other entertainment choices. And I think if you just did a drinking game with NPR on racism, bigotry, and systemic violence... you'd be dead in an hour. I mean, it's all they talk about now. There's literally nothing else happening on NPR. So, yeah. And our final story, TikTok. Now, this is out of sequence because the business section will reveal a lot more about this. But this happened earlier. This was on the 29th. Actually, that's... later on, but too little too late probably for this, unfortunately, but oh, they're trying.
TikTok's new CEO says the company will reveal how its algorithms work. This is to assuage some of the mounting pressure that it has from governments. Now, in the business section, we're going to talk about how maybe they're, you know, ByteDance, the what would you call that? The parent organization? The owner?
Well, they own... they're the published... SoftBank owns it. ByteDance develops it, right?
They may step away from that role, and an American company may step in, but I don't know. We've got to talk about that in the business section.
I think that's already been canceled.
Wow.
It's a fast-moving story.
Scary.
So, yeah, we'll do that tomorrow. And, Krista, I think we forgot, and a lot of people were outraged last week, that they did not get an update on the pumpkin saga.
The pumpkin. I actually have a picture, and I'll try to remember to send it to our editor.
You know what? I could probably pull it up here. Hang on.
Can you pull it up? I sent it on Discord earlier. I do have a pumpkin. He is softball-sized and getting bigger every day, but he decided that the patio couldn't contain his girth, so he's just dangling over the side precariously. So I need to, like,
Have you named this pumpkin?
No, I don't know why I think he's a he, too, but it's a he.
It's a he. I accidentally put the pumpkin in place of you.
Perfect.
Nice.
There it is.
Look how good he looks. We've still got a couple female flowers. I'm hoping we might get a couple more, but if we get one pumpkin off this plant, I'll be thrilled.
In before 4chan now knows where you live.
You should name it, how about Hangman? Lieutenant Dangle.
Oh, that's too cute. Oh, engagement challenge. Tell me what we should name the pumpkin so I can be disappointed when it dies.
You can put a little grave marker.
Oh.
Lieutenant Dangle, you ain't got any roots.
Okay. Yeah, tomorrow will be business and something else.
Good job.